Welcome to North Coast Conversation, a public service presentation of AM 930 and 100.3 FM WEOL. I'm your host, Bruce Van Dyke. On today's North Coast Conversation, we're going to follow along with my reports from the Lorain County Fair. I spent this previous week at the Lorain County Fair, and one more day today is the final day of the fair. But here's a little bit of the sights and sounds and some of the people you might meet at this year's Lorain County Fair. Could I have your name, please?
Laura Smurs.
Tell me about this sensory space here at the fairgrounds.
Well, we're offering a sensory space for those neurodivergent kids that have a little bit trouble being on the fairgrounds. The sights, the smells, all the sounds kind of overwhelm them. And so we're giving them a little safe space to come and calm down, relax, recharge, and be able to go out and face the fair again.
When did this idea come to be?
Well, our extension agent asked us to provide something. Actually, our 4-H club is all made up of neurodivergent kids.
What's the name of your club?
We're the Eaton Township Blue Ribbon 4-Hers. And my eldest daughter is an intervention specialist who works with autistic children. And so she started the club for a lot of her class kids who were looking for something to do. And so we've been involved with the special needs program for quite some time. And so this was just a natural progression in helping these kids.
So tell me a little bit how it's decorated, if you could describe that for us.
Well, we have a darkened area, so they can kind of relax in there. It's got the low lights. We've got beanbag chairs and crash mats, and we have fidgets for them. There's an open area where they can have their sensory bins. We have charging ports so they can listen to music on their phones. We have headphones if they need some real quiet time.
Did members of that 4-H group help to plan this or give ideas of what would work?
Oh, yes. They all...
tested out, maybe,
they
perhaps?
They all tested it. We got thumbs up. Yes, definitely. It was a lot of their input. It's stuff they enjoy to do. And
this is the Junior Fair building that we're in, right?
This is the Junior Fair building, yes. The
booth building. Let me just start. Your name, sir?
My name is Denzel St. Clair.
With, obviously, the Lorain County Beekeepers Association?
Yes.
So they got some judging going on. If you can describe a little bit of what...
Well, what they're doing is they're checking the color of the honey. It's got to fit into certain color classes. And then they have a refractometer where that they check the moisture content, because they got to have certain moisture content. If it's too high, it will ferment, and if it's too low, it granulates. And then they have a polariscope for checking for impurities. It will check for wax and different things that are in the honey that we really don't want to be in the honey to be sold to the public. And so it's just that, and this is a rather large show, so it takes hours to do this.
Now, obviously, the color of the honey comes from what type of flowers was used with the pollination?
Yes, absolutely. The specific, first of all, honeybees are plant specific. They will only work one floral source at a time. And it's the floral source that is giving the most nectar at any given time is the one that the bees are going to work at that given time. Black locust honey is going to be very light, like the one on the right up there. Buckwheat honey is going to be like the honey on the far extreme left. Buckwheat's always dark, black locust is always very light. So the plant determines the color of the honey. And sometimes you can actually get a mix because some colonies are working at some time on black locust, and then maybe a week later, before that it's capped off, they're going to be working with dandelions.
Once they harvest some of the honey from that, how do they get it to the process of the jar? You mentioned about getting impurities out. What kind of process does the beekeeper have to do?
Well, the end result is what determines the process. For example, honey shown to a judge is going to go through a very fine filter or filtering process, where that honey sold to a customer is going to be a little bit coarser filters, because the actual end result or end product you want a little bit of the wax in it, you want some of the pollen in it, you want some of the propolis in it, because that is very beneficial to the consumer. The other extreme to that is ultra-filtered honey, and ultra-filtered honey is a lot of times what you buy at the supermarkets, and that honey is determined by the USDA not to even be honey. It is so ultra-filtered or filtered.
This is mostly on visualization. Does their taste come into any of the play in judging?
You see the judge tasting the honey. So taste, smell, there's different criteria. The scorecard that you're filling out has all the criteria that they're looking for and grades the beekeeper on specifics of the scorecard.
A lot of times honey comes in sort of unique-looking jars. Is that just the preference of the beekeeper? Is there something related to the shapes and that sort of thing?
Well, in order to show, there's certain criteria that you have to follow. And in this show, I have two containers. One is a classic container, and the other one is queen line container. You have to show in those two containers or each. Because if you don't show in the same honey and you're showing different beekeepers, different honeys, then you want to make sure all of it is judged the same or looks the same or similar in order to qualify for the judge.
How long have you been a beekeeper?
Oh, good grief. 52, 53 years.
What brought you into that sort of hobby or industry, as it would be?
That's a funny one. I've been married for 52, 53 years. And my wife's grandfather gave me two colonies of bees, and I tell everybody that's the dowry that she brought to this marriage.
How many do you have currently now?
We're down now because of my age. I'm 73. And so because I'm getting older, we've cut back a whole lot. We're right now at about 30 or 40 colonies.
Do you have them all in one area, or do you have them throughout the county?
All in the same area.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Bruce Van Dyke with WEOL Radio. We just talked to people about their booths and things. And your name is?
Thomas Becker. I'm the A&R, the Agriculture and Natural Resources Educator with OSU Extension here in Lorain County.
Okay. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you'll have here at the booth so people can learn about things in the county.
Absolutely. So for the most part, our booth is manned by our Master Gardener volunteers, and they're out in the community doing all kinds of programming, mostly related to home horticulture topics, so composting, gardening, flower beds, things of that sort. But then kind of our theme for this year, we always get a lot of questions of, they see OSU Extension, what does that mean? So our theme for this year is what is Extension? Trying to kind of explain to the community what Extension is, what resources we have. So Extension is the outreach component of Ohio State University, and there's an Extension office in almost every county in Ohio, but we're there to provide resources, answer questions with anything regarding whether it's home horticulture or farm business management and anything in between. So that's kind of what our booth is here to kind of showcase, is a little bit of the resources that we have if folks come to the office or call into the office. And I think today we're highlighting invasive species. So like you see on the table here, we have our spotted lanternfly information, one of our newer invasive species in the county. So educating people what to look for, what they should do when they find it. So, yeah.
So people, do they contact you directly? Do they go to a site to get fact sheets? I see you have things to hand out here. What's the way that they contact you?
So they can absolutely come out to the office and visit us in person. So we're out on Rusher Road. The address is 42110 Rusher Road, just south of Elyria. Or they can contact our office directly at 440-326-5851. Or they can reach me directly at 440-406-5254 or my email, becker.643@osu.edu.
What's your background or education that this is the career that you have? And what's your knowledge scope, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So for school, I actually started at OSU in Worcester. They have a satellite campus there, the Agricultural Technical Institute. And then I finished my degree in Columbus, but I studied natural resource management with a sustainable agriculture specialization. And then Extension actually is a little bit of a family legacy for the Beckers, at least. My dad was involved with Extension in Wayne County for over 30 years. And now my brother is the educator in Wayne County for the Agricultural Natural Resources Services Program. So it's kind of how I got my foot in the door with Extension. And also, I was involved with the Integrated Pest Management Program in Wayne County. So we were out scouting orchards, farm fields, and things like that for pest diseases and things like that. So,
are you still out of the field, or are you mostly at a desk now these days?
It's a balance for sure. You know, answering calls and things like that is more desk work, but I am starting to get some connections with local farmers, and I'm getting some traps out and getting out to farms, just seeing how people are doing, seeing what questions they have or what challenges they might need help addressing and what resources they might need.
Right. And it's all free, right, for the most part?
I guess. Yep, yeah. For the most part. I mean, there's some programs we might charge a little bit, you know, if we have food or something like that, just to cover the cost. But yeah, for the most part, we try to make things either as cheap as we can or free.
So. Do you have people bringing in samples of things or bugs or what is this? What do I do? like that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably most of like the questions that come into the office is, you know, like you say, what's this bug? What's this plant? Do I need to be worried about it? Or if I do need to be worried about it, what can I do about it? So.
And your name, sir?
My name's Dennis Vavurka.
Talk about this Lorain County Wood Carvers Association.
Well, we've been in existence for like the 70s, late 70s. We meet weekly, and we just enjoy wood carving, camaraderie, and a lot of different styles of carving that we try to each have in our own skill sets. And so we help each other out with different things.
Talk a little bit about what you're carving today and what that's looks like, some sort of a relief or something like that,
I guess. A shallow relief. It's a trillium. And it's part of a quilt that we make for our club makes for a raffle that will be held here on the third weekend of September during the LaGrange Engine Show. And this is a trillium. Each person gets their own piece. This year's theme is bugs, leaves, flowers, and things with nature. So this is my contribution to the quilt. There'll be 16 pieces in all, and it'll be in a frame. It'll be very unique, you know, usually pretty nice looking.
Talk a little bit about the tools you're using and some of the technique, if you could, what you're doing, really.
Well, I use a bench knife, and they use that to make stop cuts. And then you use you turn that same knife maybe at about a 30-degree angle and go into your stop cut, and then you start removing the wood that doesn't look like the trillium. And then I also use shallow gouges and help get in a little bit deeper to show more accent on the flower petals, and then work back to the edges of the wood from there.
You have on display different types of carvings. Tell me a little bit about that, or what kind of things you do as a carver.
I like to do birds, and I do relief carvings, shallow reliefs, and medium reliefs of like farm scenes or covered bridges, things like that. I do some Santa Claus carving in around, that's basically, you know, the things I do the most. The fellow that's not. Was sitting next to me, but is not here at the moment, does these Santa sickles and Santa Claus carvings.
Where do you find the wood, or what wood do you get, or what's best for you, or how do you determine what you want to carve out of what you have, or what's the wood?
Basswood is the prime wood that we use around here for most of our projects. Tupelo is another one. Some people like butternut. As you start getting into some of your harder grain woods, they're harder to keep your equipment sharp. So depending on what it's a sacrifice, you know.
Talk a little bit about your tools. How long have you had them? Is there new carving tools, or is it all standbys the same?
It's pretty much standby the same. The hand ones, they're either like sharp knives with different kind of tips on them, and your gouges are your gouges, and they have different levels of depth in the gouge. And all the way to a V groove, you know. So those have been around for years and years. Some of your newer things are your more power carving, where you use bits and rotary motors and rotary tools. And those are used. I use them as myself. But if you can move a lot more wood faster with that kind of equipment, you know. So it just allows for a different aspect of carving called power carving.
When you're carving something, how long does it take you to do something? Or what time do you spend doing that, I guess?
Well, it depends on the project. You know, something like this here, the smaller one, I'll probably have about 6 hours into it. Some projects, you know, you could have 30 or 40 hours into it, 50 hours into it. It depends on the detail you're putting into the wood.
Do you find you have a project, maybe you'll stop because it doesn't, it's not, the wood's not working with you, and somehow it's, you know, your creativity doesn't work, and you go to something else and come back to that, or do you do?
Yeah, there's, you know, I probably have three things going in my basement at a time, you know, three or four things. You know, you walk away from it, you know, and like, ah, I'm not, it's not feeling it, so then you just do something else, or even find something else to do, you know. So you might pick up a piece a month later, and then it starts coming together, you know, so.
If someone's interested in wood carving, what's the best way for them to learn about your group, I guess?
We have a Facebook page, and it's called Lorain County Wood Carvers. So you can find us on there, and there you'll see a lot of examples of carvings that people have done and a lot of information about our club. That would probably be the best way to do it. We meet, again, once a week on Wednesdays at the Lucy Idle Center in Vermilion, and then about the third Wednesday we meet at Vermilion Metro Park.
Right. Well, here at the Lorain County Fair, you're inside where the Lorain Engine Club is located. So you got some nice shade, but a lot of great art on display here. Can I have your name first?
Tim Zacharias.
So talk about the LaGrange Engine Club. You got this building here at the fairgrounds. Outside you have the different types of engines. What else is inside here too?
Well, we got the four John Deere L's here. They're all unstyled 1937s, only year they made them. There's something different about each and every one of them.
And other than this one's yellow and there's three green, I don't know what the difference was.
Yeah, well, the owner knows. He said, yeah, well, if you look, like, this has got a little different tire, that one's got weights on it.
We would hope that there's improvements every year to the different models, right?
Well, this is all the same year. That's the only year that they made them. Okay. This one here is the same model of tractor across the way here, and that's called a styled L, where these are unstyled.
Do you have any items here, or what kind of things that brought you into the LaGrange Engine Club?
Oh, I got all kinds of stuff. I only brought a little lawnmower here today, Case lawnmower, because it's the year of the Case tractor. Every year we have a feature tractor for our show, and this is the Case year.
Okay.
So I got a Case tractor. The club inherited a Case tractor out there at the end, and that's here. That's owned by the club now.
So when you have your show coming up in September, what takes place then?
Oh, everything. We'll have the steamers out there in the parking lot. This building will have models going on in here, wood carving again. It'll go on everywhere.
And there's people, vendors here too as well, right?
Yeah. There'll be all kinds of flea market here. You name it, it's here. If you can't find it, you don't need it.
Do they have people here that may have parts or expertise or other ones for sale, that type of thing?
Yep. You'll find a lot of that. The whole infield should be filled with tractors. And then we'll have a tractor pull on Saturday, tractor ride on Sunday. Old cars will be here. We'll have cars. We'll have Indian motorcycles.
What's fascinating about this, that you're part of a club like this? What do you like about the engines, I guess?
Well, I've got a few of the old hit-and-miss engines, and I farm, so I've got quite a few tractors. And I use the old tractors a lot. I tell people this ain't a museum. I use these tractors.
And because you use them, you have to know how they work, how to repair them, how to maybe even manufacture a part, I would assume.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes you have to. But There's aftermarket companies you can get old parts from, one of them being Steiner Tractor. And I've got some giveaway stuff from Steiner over there on the tables. And when our show comes, I'll have catalogs and hats and different things from them. But they basically got parts for all kinds of old tractors.
When you hear an engine, can you tell if something's right or wrong? Can you tell just by the sound what maybe needs
sometimes,
to be fixed?
Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Just like a car. Leave the radio off and pay attention.
Good advice. All right. Am I going to have your name, please?
Hi. Yeah, this is Jackie Baca, 4-H educator here in Lorain County.
So the 4-H building here, a lot of different displays. Talk a little bit about what the displays are and what they decide to make a theme every year.
Yes, so our Junior Fair Board solicits ideas and suggestions from our 4-H community, and then they vote on what they want the theme to be. This year's theme was Party Till the Cows Come Home, which I have to say has been one of the more fun themes we've had in the past. We've got all sorts of balloons and disco balls and all sorts of wonderful things to really showcase each club, the kids' individuality and creativity within that club, and then, of course, some of the 4-H projects that they've been working on so hard this year.
When they're putting a display like that together, I suppose they work off-site, get all that, and then there's some day prior to the fair that everybody shows up and goes at it?
Oh, absolutely. So our clubs meet some once a month, some twice a month, and they usually put together a decorating committee that works together to come up with how that club wants to emanate the theme in their club booth. They are able to come here Saturday and Sunday prior to fair to finish setting up all of their decorations. A lot of the decorations they make off-site, so when they get here, they just have to put up those decorations in the booth. It is a busy, busy building on Saturday and Sunday with all those kids in here and the excitement of all the pre-fair stuff.
If someone comes through and they have a child that might be interested in 4-H, what's the process of getting them involved in the program?
The first step is to connect with a club. So what we do is if they come to our booth here, the OSU Extension 4-H booth in Building 14, we'll give them some additional information so we can connect them with a 4-H club. We really do our best to make sure the club that we suggest to that family fits the family's needs and interests, including what part of the county they live in, the age of their children, and what their children's project interests may be.
That way, and also by coming to the fair, they get to see what the variety is, and they can find one that maybe resonates with them. Right?
Absolutely. We really try to make sure we do our best at giving our kids as many opportunities as possible to look at the different projects that we offer to really try and find that spark and what sparks their interest in those project areas to allow them to really learn more about what they want to learn more about and potentially look into developing those skills that they can use now and in life in the future and future careers.
What's the age range of a 4-H member?
We start with our youngest kids, which are our Clover Buds. That's age 5 to 8, and they focus more on social skills, show-and-tell type events, motor skill stuff, sharing those types of fun things that you worry about with those kids in that age group. And then our project age members are ages 9 to 19, and those are the kids that you'll see a lot of here that do more of our competitive events.
And your name?
My name's Mariah Dietz. I'm the Public Information Officer with the Lorain County Metro Parks.
Here at the Lorain County Fair, the tent is very tranquil. I see some. I hear some wildlife. I see some. Talk a little bit about what people will see when they come through here.
Absolutely. So we're at booth 348, where we've been situated for several years now. Our tent really features just a glimpse of some of the many habitats that you can see at the Lorain County Metro Parks. So we have everything from the wetlands, and you can hear the water in our sample pond here. We have the meadow, the forest. We have the lakes and the rivers, so all things that you can find at a Lorain County Metro Park. It's serene because that's exactly what the parks offer you. When you head out onto the trail, you can get, just some deep relaxation. You can find a chance to exercise as well, and there's certainly a park for everyone.
There is throughout the county, right?
Throughout the county, yeah, absolutely. So we have over 11,000 acres of land in the county, and we're really lucky to have just a little bit of sampling of all different types of habitats.
Anything interesting going on as we get into the fall season for the Metro Park?
Yeah, so you know what fall means for the Metro Parks, and that's the Halloween fair that we offer every single year. It is our biggest event of the year. We see over 60,000 people come and go from our park for that purpose. All of our staff from all over the place come together to bring that together, and we'll be offering it again this year for just $5 a person.
This is a Fairs Forever booth. We're promoting or showing what we're doing with the new buildings, the new expansions at the fair, and then we're trying to sell off the naming rights to some of the pens that'll go inside the new buildings.
So I noticed those. I've never seen these before. So this is a new venture, I guess, is part of that?
These are new pens for all of the expo center where all the pigs, goats, and sheep are going to be. These are all new pens that will be in there for the kids.
So. Talk about that expo center. And I guess there's going to be a covered horse arena here as well. Yep. that's what's taking place on the fairgrounds, where people see that some areas gated off, and I saw a huge pile of dirt on the other side of the tracks.
Right? Yeah, we're putting up a 67,000 square foot expo center, which will be for the pigs, goat, and sheep, like I said. There's a covered riding arena for the horses, and then there'll be a new beef barn that'll be put up, where there'll be two or three of the existing cattle barns tore down, and then that's where the new beef barn will go.
What's the timeline on that? I mean, it's obviously started. So.
Yeah, the expo center starts Monday after the fair. They start putting the footers in. So less than 5 days away, they're going to start putting it up.
And that's to sort of increase a year-round activity here at the fairgrounds, more than it had been, right?
Yes. The fair only is 1 week a year, and we want to have something that can be used year-round for sporting events, craft shows, car shows, anything that anybody wants to rent a facility that big, we can help them out.
Does any of that impact what the junior fair has here and other buildings on the grounds?
Nope. This is its own separate entity. It's not going to take away from anything. It's going to enhance what we have now. So.
All right. Can I have your name, please?
Maya Santana.
And talk about the blood donations that's going on today at the fair.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the 51st annual Lorain County Fair Blood Drive. And everybody who donates at this blood drive will receive a cow t-shirt. And also we have various other promotions for Vitalant. Every donor will also be entered in a chance to win one of two $10,000 gift cards. And also every donor who donates from July 28th to August 29th will also receive a $10 gift card from Vitalant for donating with us as a thank you gift.
Talk a little bit about the need that's going on right now. I've seen in the news as well about the critical need for blood.
Absolutely. During the month of July, especially during the weekend of the 4th of July, we experienced a severe decline in blood donations. And that has actually brought us into emergency shortage during that time. And now we are trying to build back our blood supply. And everybody who donates blood with Vitalant has the potential to save up to 3 lives and potentially be helping a neighbor, as we are the blood provider for local hospitals in this area.
Coming to the fair, how long is the process for somebody that'll come inside your vehicle?
So donating blood is one of the easiest ways to save a life, and it only takes about an hour of your time. The actual drawing of the blood takes about 15 minutes, and we separate your blood into 3 different components: red blood cells, platelets, and plasma. And all 3 of those components go to help people who are experiencing trauma, like having a major blood loss, people who are experiencing cancer. This will help platelets, and plasma specifically helps burn victims. So when you come in to donate, it takes 1 hour, and within that hour, we're able to collect the blood and manufacture it, those components, and take it to that patient who is in need.
That's a look at some of the places I stopped with and the people I talked to at the Lorain County Fair. Today, the final day of the fair at the fairgrounds in Wellington. You've been listening to North Coast Conversation, a public service presentation of AM 930 and 100.3 FM WEOL. I'm Bruce Van Dyke.